This podcast is made possible by the patrons at patreon.com. To support the show, visit patreon.com/KeithBurgun. Hello, and welcome to the Clockwork Game Design Podcast. I'm your host, Keith Burgun. This is episode 15. I'm going to be mostly talking about redefining elegance in game design in this episode. However, there was one thing I wanted to get at first before I get into that. And I read this article on Gamasutra today that was about the game Tharsis, which, if you haven't heard of it, it's kind of a space-themed roguelike-ish game where you're managing a crew and you're going through space. And I actually haven't played the game, but I've done a little bit of research on it. And it seems to be like very much in the genre of, you know, FTL, and it's actually themed a little bit like FTL. And those things are tend to be highly random, those kind of roguelike-y sort of experience-y games where you're kind of going through a series of little challenges and mini games, and it's all basically based on randomness. Like, there's a lot of stuff you have to learn about, like, oh, which weapons are better and which armor is better, and they're basically roguelikes in a different package. So you have to learn some knowledge, but beyond that, you just have to play a ton of matches to actually, you know, succeed, because you're just waiting for good rolls. And so Tharsis sort of looks the same to me as a lot of those things. And, you know, I've played a lot of those things in my life, and so I'm not particularly interested in playing the game. However, I did read this Gamasutra article, and it kind of goes further. It's one thing to just make a highly random game. It's another thing to make a highly random game and then sort of dismiss the criticisms of randomness without explaining why you're dismissing them, and then go on to kind of like advocate for more randomness in game design, which is actually what the designer Zach Gage does in this article. So I'm going to read a couple of quotes from the article and then talk about why I find them to be problems. So the article is called "Roll for Your Life: Making Randomness Transparent in Tharsis." And I'll link to it in the show notes. But yeah, so it says that Zach Gage wanted to build a game where the randomness of an entropy of dice is exciting. I mean, I think people like to use the word entropy, and I think that's just kind of like a cooler way to say randomness, and just, you know, it's a way to try to make it sound more sophisticated, I think. It doesn't actually mean that this is any different from, you know, FTL or Civilization or Talisman or any number of mostly randomness experiences. So here's a quote. It says, "If something says you're going to have a 90% chance and you fail, you think it's unfair. But if someone says you're going to be successful at this unless you roll a 1 on this 10-sided die, and then you roll a 1, it's kind of exciting." That's a quote from the designer. And basically what he's saying, this actually gets to one of the most substantive things he says in the whole article in defense of randomness, or at least randomness the way that he's presenting it. And the best I can tell, that he's saying that if you just kind of reskin randomness, people like it more. And I mean, that's kind of a recurring theme throughout this article, is people like randomness. And I'm always kind of trying to look for, you know, what's beyond the like. And I think it's one thing to like things, but there's always explanations behind that liking. Like, well, what is it you're liking about it? I think we can look deeper into randomness and what it is people really like about it. And I think we can actually kind of parse out that there are certain things. And I think this is what people generally tend to get at with their complaints with randomness. I think I have been more specific in my issues with randomness than most people have, but I do think that most people who complain about randomness at all understand that there's a cheapness, that there's a flatness there when a game's outcome can just be decided by the roll of a die. That there's a sort of futility and a worthlessness there. Like, there's not really anything happening there when the outcome of the match was, you know, and people don't think about things in terms of like a, you know, a clockwork game where you have like this final piece of, you know, a goal, and it informs everything that happens before. This is something I talk about all the time on my podcast, but people don't think about things that way. But I do think that they have like a loose sense that the structure of a game sort of matters somewhat. And, you know, if it's just, you just lost because you rolled a one, I think that people have a pretty decent, like, people kind of get a sense that there's something kind of wrong with that. And I think that even this designer admits that, like, and he sort of half admits it, but then he just sort of says, but people like it anyway. And I think there would be one thing if he was saying, you know, I wouldn't be making this complaint if he just said, you know what, people like this. There are problems with it. This game doesn't address those problems. Just have fun rolling some dice. If that's all he said, I think I wouldn't complain. But he kind of, he goes farther. This is a quote from the article. Some would call the systems in Tharsis too close to gambling, but Gage doesn't mind the comparison. Quote, gambling is really fun, says Gage. Obviously, gambling is rife with problems, but it's something that humans enjoy doing. Because of the unethical connotations that come with gambling, Gage theorizes, a lot of game designers, this is another quote, and a lot of game designers have fled away from gambling and tried to make games that minimized randomness or didn't explore it at all. In designing the mechanics for Tharsis, Gage hopes that other developers might choose to embrace the excitement of randomness once again. So, nowhere, and granted, this is a short article, so I'm not expecting some, you know, huge thesis about, well, here is the, you know, the counter argument to all that's been said about randomness. And I also don't know who specifically Gage is referring to with a lot of game designers have fled away from gambling. In fact, I kind of think that's not true. I'm straining to think of any game designers who have fled away from randomness, other than maybe some board game designers, like Euro board game designers, some abstract designers, like the GIF people. Who else? I can't think of anyone else who gets away from randomness in game design. Now, I suppose there is room for disagreement about what games are random, but I do think... And that may be the source of the disagreement there. So, I mean, the argument here is, you know, he says, obviously gambling is rife with problems, but it's something that humans enjoy doing. And, you know, I feel like you could make a similar argument for so many things that are just bad. You know, I mean, for, you know, sugar or heroin or all kinds of things that, you know, humans enjoy, but they are not in our best interest. To take it back to, I don't know, the feminism angle. You know, humans enjoy seeing people having sex or being naked, but I don't think that, you know, that necessarily means that Breaking Bad would be better if there was more, you know, just sexualization and, you know, gratuitous sexualization just for its own sake. Like, the fact that people just enjoy things, that's not enough. And that's sort of the philosophy I see being pushed forward. And I guess I'm kind of picking on this a little bit because I also know that, you know, I know Zach Gage a little bit. We talk sometimes when I go to practice at NYU. And he's like a cool, smart guy. And he's also very well respected in the world of game design, rightly so. And, you know, so when someone like that is kind of just saying, to me, it just sounds like they're just saying, just, you know, do what people like. Don't worry about all this, like, the problems that, you know, he's admitting there are problems and he's not addressing them. And he's just saying, just do what people already like. And I feel like it's very regressive. And, you know, I do think that, these kinds of games, you know, people will always make them. I'm not complaining that he made one of them. It's more that he is advocating for more designers to just, you know, don't worry about stuff. Just make what people like, you know. And I just think that's a regressive and negative message. And I'm kind of disappointed. And I thought I would talk about that a little bit. So yeah, let me know what you think. I did leave a short comment on that Game of Sutra article, just sort of being talking about how I was disappointed that they didn't address the concerns of people like myself who have serious problems with randomness in game design. And actually worse, they didn't even really adequately dismiss them. It would be one thing if they were just saying, you know what, we know about those, they're good arguments, whatever, but we're just making a silly dice game and enjoy the... They're not taking that angle. And if that was the angle that was taken, I wouldn't be complaining. But they took more of a, you know, the constructive way forward is to regress into caveman, you know, 2000 BCE dice rolling games. And I just think that's really depressing and, you know, it's a negative thing. So let me know what you think. For the rest of the show, I'm going to be talking about elegance in game design. I made a 3-minute game design video. Probably a lot of the listeners of this show will know about this, the series I did on YouTube called 3-Minute Game Design. It has 10 episodes, and each episode focuses on a specific kind of like lesson about game design. One of them is about elegance. It's called Elegance and Depth. And the way I've always thought about elegance, and I think the way that most designers think about elegance, is kind of encapsulated by this concept of there's a famous quote that games should be easy to learn and difficult to master, which is kind of related to something that I've embraced for years as the definition of elegance. And that is having a low number of inherent complexity rules, which emerges into a large number of emergent complexity rules when activated, like when you play it. So, you know, the classic example is Go. Go is the ultimate example of, you know, you have a very small amount of rules. Technically speaking, you can teach the rules of Go in 2 minutes or 1 minute, maybe, maybe even 30 seconds. There's just a tiny amount of rules for that game in terms of, then that's the inherent complexity of Go. And then the emergent complexity is all the crazy stuff, all the crazy strategies and shapes and openings and all this stuff that happens in a match of Go. And so I said in that video that that elegance should be looked at as like the ratio between inherent complexity and emergent complexity. And that's how much depth your game has. That's what I said in the our video. And today I want to kind of like tweak that a little bit, because that's not false. None of that's false. But I just think that there's a better way to use the term elegant when applied to game designs. If we're saying that a game design is elegant, then it should be doing the things that a game needs to do to be a good game in a efficient, effective way. So to me, it's actually not enough that Go just has a small number of rules and a large number of emergent, you know, possibility space. Actually, I think that getting that set up is really actually very easy. Take tic-tac-toe and just make the board 100 by 100 or something. Boom, there you go. Elegant, right? Is it though? You know, and that's sort of been my new thought. And some of this is kind of just, I am focusing on Go a lot, because I think Go is a really good test like experiment, test case for a lot of the stuff that, you know, I've been grappling with. I think that we tend to really glorify Go, and something I'm going to talk about in a future episode is just the glorification of the classics, and how the entire concept of a classic is something that we should, you know, artificially prop up in modern times, even though it can't hold up by its own weight, or it can't carry its own weight. But that's for another time. Go, you know, we glorify it a lot. I think people, it's one of those games like chess that people all kind of say they love, and they say it's a great game and it's a brilliant design and it's super elegant. But it actually really has a lot of problems that make it really pretty unplayable for most people, most modern people. And I guess I could do a whole show just about the problems with Go. But I mean, one thing I've said is that, you know, having just this 19 by 19 board, that's a huge board. It has, I think, 361 spaces, if I'm remembering correctly. And, you know, no designer in their right mind would walk into a game design convention with a abstract strategy game. Like, let's say Go didn't exist and, you know, someone invented it in 2016, like this year, someone came up with that concept and they brought it to, you know, I don't know, Gen Con or some board game convention and showed it around. Like, people would be like, what is this garbage? This is awful. This is terrible. This is totally unplayable. I'm supposed to choose from that many like spaces. And it's like the most, like, I have to like sit there and look at like so many possible moves every time and sort of calculate ahead again, each, you know, every possible move. It's just totally insane. I've talked about, you know, Uncapped Look Ahead and the Information Horizon is an article that I wrote last year. And I think it was last year. And how, you know, you need to set a good information horizon so that players can't, it's not just a look ahead contest. You can't just kind of like look ahead here and there. And I know that Go advocates will say, yeah, but Go is so complicated that you can't just use look ahead to outdo the other player. You can't just have a look ahead contest because there's too many things to calculate. And this is, in fact, the reason that computers are not that great at Go as compared to something like chess. But even with that said, most of what you'll be doing if you're playing Go is doing look ahead. And, you know, maybe, yeah, you're right. You can't look ahead at everything. You can't calculate ahead every move that's possible. So what that actually does is, you know, the branches that you end up going down versus the branches that the opponent end up going down, because there's so many of them, it like kind of necessarily means that it's just more random, actually. Because there's just so many branches to look down. And, you know, I do think there is something to be said for the idea that, well, it's kind of, people get a heuristic kind of sense for which branches to look down. And, you know, there is something there. And I think that's, to the extent that people like Go, I think that's how it operates. But I think that for most people, they can tell that there's just way too many branches. There's just way too much for them to consider. And that's why most people don't get into Go, despite its classic status. I mean, if Go was actually good to play, like, based on how much people talk it up, like, everyone would be playing it. And, you know, there is a crowd for it, but it's kind of a super, super niche thing. And probably it'll get more and more niche as time goes on. And, you know, I think that modern things, people expect a certain level of like efficiency and I will say elegance, and Go does not have that elegance. It's not elegant to have a giant board 19 by 19 and players just have to put down stones and look ahead at all these like crazy possibilities. That's kind of what I'm trying to get at here, is that we can't be calling that elegant. And so that's why I think that the inherent complexity to emergent complexity relationship is kind of, it's just missing something a little bit. And I think real elegance should address more. Some have brought up the complaint that the way I'm using the word elegance is just basically another word for good. And I think, though, when you're applying elegance to a design, when you're saying, oh, wow, that's a really elegant design, elegant car design, it's a really elegant anything, lamp design, I think that is kind of saying good for the most part. Like, there are probably some exceptions, a really inelegant thing that someone just likes or has some other connection to some outside thing and, you know, for whatever reason would be called good and inelegant. That does happen. However, if you're talking about the design of it, I really think that, you know, what design is a plan. And I think that you know, people, there's something in the word design that sort of means elegant. Like they're the same thing. There's an essential, a good design is an elegant design. And something might be good, even though it wasn't well designed and it's inelegant, you know? So, maybe I'm off base there, but that's the sense of the word elegance that I get when applied to design. If you're saying something is well designed, I think that that also means that it's elegant. It's like kind of the same thing. So when we're talking about good game design and what is elegant game design, I think it makes sense to factor in stuff like, well, how does it deal with things, other crucial things like information horizon? You know, how is it highly random? Randomness is bringing in all this extra information. That's inelegant. There's other factors that are really crucial that that aren't just the number of rules. You know, a good goal that expresses the core mechanism, a good core mechanism, the right number of supporting mechanisms. And some of that is kind of related to number of inherent complexity rules, and that's good, but not all of them are. It's sometimes a larger number of inherent complexity rules and a lower number of emergent complexity rules may result in a more elegant and better design. That's another thing, is that, you know, more depth, as I described in that podcast or that show episode, is not always preferable. There's another element to it, which is accessibility. How well does the game deliver its strategic information to the user? So I would say Go gets like an F in that, and that's a major problem. It has incredible depth, probably 10 times more depth than it'll ever need, but it's so bad at letting users access that depth. And because of, you know, no information horizon, which leads to kind of random outcomes in the way that I've explained, and that's not elegant. Something elegant would, you know, efficiently and effectively convey whatever depth it has. I do think that, you know, having really low depth is a problem, we don't need astronomical depth. I think the only reason that Go needs that astronomical depth is because, you know, frankly, if you look at like 9x9 Go, it's just like very clearly, obviously solvable and not that interesting. I mean, it's not solvable. I know we haven't solved it yet. I believe that 7x7 is the Go that we've actually solved. But the point where a game gets solved is, you know, there's a point way before that humans start feeling like, yeah, maybe I can't solve this, but it feels pretty damn solvey. And, you know, there needs to be a good amount of headroom there. So I'm realizing that this episode is a lot more about Go than I intended. This applies to things like chess and other games that people tend to think of as elegant designs. Poker is another good example. People might say poker is elegant, but, you know, it's so random and it takes so many matches of poker to really get any feedback on whether you made a good move or not. And I think that's another way in which games can be really inelegant, is, you know, games should deliver meaningful feedback in one match. And that's something I'm going to be writing an article about pretty soon, which is this idea. In one match, you should get the most effective feedback for your decisions as possible. It shouldn't take a best of 10, or sorry, a best of 11. That shows how much I play random games, is that I said best of 10. I just showed my hand. And another part of elegance should be talking about the efficiency of delivering feedback. And that's kind of what I'm getting at here, is that there's more to elegance than just this relationship, this two numbers relationship of the numbers of inherent complexity and emergent complexity. An elegant game design has to do all of the things that makes a game design good in you know, as few rules as possible. So it should be, you know, easy to learn. It should be very deep, and it should communicate its strategic depth to you as effectively as possible. And it shouldn't be introducing random information. And, you know, I think those are all part of what makes something elegant. So the reason I made this a podcast episode is because it's a new thought to me, actually, kind of. And so I kind of wanted to just like spitball about it a little bit. And I'm going to write a more formalized article on this later at some point, once things are a little more settled. But I would like to get hear from you and see what you think. And before I finish up, I should also say that that old thing that we used to refer to as, or I used to refer to as elegance, now I would maybe call that complexity elegance. So we're just talking about the types of inherent versus emergent complexity, and we're just talking about that ratio and that alone, and that we refer to that as complexity elegance, because I agree that that is something that is still a useful metric. Like, we do want to know that. It's just that that's not the whole picture. So yeah, that's about all I had to say on that topic. Please let me know what you think, if I'm way off base with this. And yeah, I'll talk to you in the comments. Thanks so much for listening. Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I just wanted to take a minute to mention a couple things. First of all, the audio in this episode is a little weird, and so I apologize about that. I'm still experimenting with good setups. I don't have like a real studio, so I'm, you know, doing some weird stuff to kind of make sure I get good sound. And in this particular episode, things didn't go as well as I hoped, but I think it's perfectly clear. It just sounds a little bit strange. The other thing I wanted to mention was we're about to come up on our 10,000th download, and that's not a lot for big podcasts, you know, that, you know, the number one podcasts and the top 10 podcasts in the world. But for a niche podcast like this one that is about game design, and it's not just about game design, but it's like this very philosophical aesthetics, sort of esoteric subcategory of game design theory. And, you know, thank you so much for listening to these episodes. And it's a lot of fun for me to do them, and it's productive for me, and it make, you know, helps me to formalize my own thinking. And I get great feedback from you guys, and I really appreciate it. And, you know, if you feel so inclined, please check out the Patreon page and consider signing up, even just for a dollar or whatever. That means a lot to me to have supporters. And thank you so much for listening, and I hope you'll listen next week or next time. I've been doing about one podcast a week, which I'm pretty happy with the rate. I think around the holidays I was a little slower, but for the most part, it's been going pretty good, and I see that continuing into the future. So thanks for listening, and thanks for subscribing. And oh, leave me a review on iTunes or any of those kinds of things, Stitcher, all those kind of things, if you can. That would help me a lot. So thanks again for listening, and I'll see you again soon.